Good evening and welcome to First Edition on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yost. Thank you for joining us for our first of 2 hours on this Wednesday. In the second hour on this Wellness Wednesday, we will be joined by Cynthia Miss Pretty Gooding of the Serenity Wellness Studio and Fashion Spa House. And of course, we'll have a report from Lamont Summers, Assistant Professor of Media Law and Ethics at the School of Global Journalism and Communication here, including a report on the GOP debate, Fox News GOP debate, some people calling it Trump-palooza. You can call it what you want. It is coming tomorrow night, and there are going to be a lot of people watching and listening. Later on in this hour, in the first hour, we're going to be joined by Stephen Janis and Taya Graham and have a full Mod Squad report with my colleague Roberto Alejandro of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper, who will be joining me in a couple of minutes. But first, a majority of blacks in the United States, according to an Associated Press survey, more than 3 out of 5 say they or a family member have personal experience with being treated unfairly by the police, and their race is the reason. Joining me on the phone is political and pop culture commentator Lisa Durden. Lisa Durden, welcome to First Edition.
Well, thank you for having me. Unfortunately, they had to do a survey to discuss that. Well, black folks don't need a survey. We live it.
No, we don't. We clearly don't need a survey to let us know that the police treat us badly.
It validates what we've already been saying, but that's okay.
But I mean, it is pretty ironic. I'll use that word that they had to conduct this survey to affirm, I guess, or bolster, for lack of a better term, what we've known for decades and for generations.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, I mean, I don't know who did the survey. I don't know who sponsored the survey. I'm guessing somebody white did the survey. Don't know. But I do know that typically whenever somebody white says something is, therefore it is.
Right.
So am I angered by the survey? No. Is it correct? Absolutely. Am I glad that the survey is bringing credibility to what we've been saying all along and we're not so-called pulling the race card as they will, which, of course, what the hell is that about?
Right.
So it's all good in the hood, as they say. However, this is something that African Americans have always known from the beginning of slavery through till now. So we have been assaulted and we've been abused and we've been hunted by the police like dogs and animals in the street for years. Not every police officer, of course not, but one is too many.
Sure. I mean, the survey was done by the Associated Press, NORC, Center for Public Affairs and Research. But you mentioned the fact, like dogs in the street. I mean, that's a very cogent comment for right now, given the fact that we are coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the death of Michael Brown and how he literally, his body lay in the street for at least 4 hours when he died last August.
Yes, and I think that, unfortunately, after Michael Brown, there have been more black people slain in the street by police officers and in churches by, white racists like Dylann Roof and these individuals. And nobody cares about, quote, the black lie. And people get annoyed when we have to separate a phrase called Black Lives Matter from All Lives Matter. Stop playing that game about, All Lives Matter. Well, of course all lives matter, but clearly only to some people. So if all lives matter, which would include blacks and everyone, we wouldn't be getting shot down, choked out, and tasered in the street and hanged in jail cells and saying we killed ourselves. So this is what's going on. We have to separate this phrase from All Lives Matter to bring some very distinct attention to the black life, unfortunately.
This survey, Lisa, includes some testimonies, I believe, from individuals who have had, these types of encounters with police. One by a man named Larry Washington, who's now 30 years old, of Maryville, Indiana. says that his encounter with a white police officer when he was arrested for theft in Burbank, Illinois, back when he was a teen, he said, quote, "When I got to the police station, the officer who arrested me told me that I looked like I wanted to do something about it," and adding that he kept calling him nigger over and over again. I mean, this is not isolated information here, I guess.
Absolutely not. That story is such a repetitive story that goes on and on in many places in the United States where African Americans live and reside, and for that matter, where we might be. I have had experiences with police officers, actually, unfortunately, some black ones too, because a lot of times the abused becomes the abuser.
Right.
So some black cops bust up black people because they've been mistreated. A white cop pulled me over in New York City about a few months back, sometime in the latter part of 2014, and said I was using my cell phone, and so he wrote me a ticket. I go to the court in Brooklyn, and thank God for this judge not being a racist white judge. So as we're talking, and he's asking me questions, he's asking the guy questions, and I'm answering the questions, the guy's answering the questions. The judge looked at the ticket because I said, well, you know, he said he followed me for two lights. He didn't follow me for two lights. And I went through two lights. He followed me for one light and pulled me over. And I was wondering what he pulled me over for. And so he said, so, officer, you said in the ticket you followed, you didn't say in the ticket you followed her for two lights and that you saw her with the cell phone in her right hand. Where did you get that from? He said, oh, he said, why isn't that information in the ticket, written up on the ticket? He said, oh, because after this happened, in preparation for the court date, I remembered it and I wrote notes.
Wow.
So you remember what I did after you pulled me over. I'm long gone, you're long gone, and sometime later on, in preparation of this court date, you want to write down some additional information I was doing that is not documented in the ticket. So you know what the judge said, don't you?
Well, I hope. I know what he said.
He said, okay. And then he said, I'm ready to rule now. And I said, oh, Lisa, you're found not guilty. Boom. So this man was literally making up stuff
right
as he went along and had the nerve to be bold to say, I broke this down later on. He felt very comfortable saying it in the court of law, but he lied.
But unfortunately, that has been the narrative that we've seen play over and over again in many cases where people's lives were lost, where police officers were prepared to make up stuff.
Right. Luckily, in my particular situation, that particular day, I didn't get bashed over the head. But the point is, it's not, people don't understand something. We're looking at those real, real obvious things like, and terrible things like when somebody gets murdered and bashed in the head and abused. Well, how about the millions of stories like what I just said that cost us other things like money and problems?
Sure.
And like, you know, we have a lot of other offenses that are not murders that they do to us too. When you add all of that together, it's just, you know, it's just a debacle.
And it has been devastating to our community for many, many years. And
absolutely.
And clearly, the Associated Press's survey didn't
and
necessarily, you know.
I had an experience. I was working in corporate America, so I wanted to leave and start my own company. So when I started my own production company, because I produce documentaries and reality shows as well, I'm kind of like all things multimedia. While building the company, I was substitute teaching. And I was substitute teaching this English class in Maplewood, New Jersey, at a school called Columbia High School, where they read the book Fences. So the teacher who was in the class, this was a special ed class, so you have more than one teacher in the room. This was a high school class. So after the kids read the book, they were supposed to talk about, you know, well, let's talk about who you want inside your fence and why, and who you want outside your fence and why. So everybody was giving their point of view. One little boy said, well, the people I want outside my fence are, and he started with police officers. He said, cops. The white teacher said, why would you want cops outside your fence? You don't trust police officers?
Oh, my.
They're trustworthy. They said, excuse me. I said to the teacher, I said, excuse me. He told you who he wanted outside his fence. You don't get to judge why he wants them outside the fence. He said he doesn't trust police, therefore he doesn't.
Right.
So I had to stand up for the boy telling her who he wanted outside his doggone fence.
Indeed.
He don't want no cops in there. He don't trust them. You trust the white lady, and you can look in the survey, and it shows more white trust the police.
Of course.
Well, obviously you do.
Well, because obviously white America has a vastly different experience with law enforcement than black America. Lisa Durden, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us about this survey, your thoughts on this.
Thank you for having me on the phone.
Indeed. Thank you. So we're going to continue our conversation on law enforcement. My colleague Roberto Alejandro is in the studio with me. What Lisa makes a very important point and an obvious point. We didn't need a survey to know that this was our reality.
No, yeah. I mean, she's absolutely right. You know, these surveys really get at me sometimes. I mean, not only because a survey like this is only probably going to reveal what we, not just what we already know we experience on a day-to-day basis, but even the survey itself, even if you're a white person who thinks black people are just playing the race card,
right.
It's a survey that is going to produce data that, if that's what you think, it'll reinforce that. If you think police are a problem in the black community, to reinforce that. It's a classic example of journalists sort of taking an issue, since this was done by the Associated Press.
Right.
And rather than sort of like trying to find out what are the facts, what are the information, which obviously would buttress the point that these survey responders were making, they just say, oh, well, what do people think about this? And it's one of these like sort of shortcuts in journalism that just drives me kind of crazy because it doesn't produce anything useful.
You and me both. And I think that the work that you've been doing, and specifically this interview, this most recent interview that you've done as part of your On Background blog, you spoke to Michael Woods Jr., who was a police officer in Baltimore City for 11 years. Tell us again a little bit more about him.
Yeah, so Mr. Wood was a Baltimore police officer for 11 years. He rose to the rank of sergeant. And when I phrased it in those terms, right. he kind of laughed and pushed back a little bit.
Said it wasn't a big deal.
It wasn't quite as big a deal, as though he sort of rose through the ranks. Right. And, you know, it's not quite as dramatic as that. He says, 5 years in, I took a test and I passed it and I became sergeant. But he's someone who in June started tweeting some of the things he had done and seen while a Baltimore police officer that most of us would sort of be taken aback by in terms of if we had this sense that these were common police practices. And so we spoke for about 45 minutes about different issues related to policing and the prospects for reform.
Well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go to one of the clips from your interview with Michael Wood. Just to warn people, I believe we've scoured the recording, but there may be a little bit of dicey language in there, nothing dramatic. But just a warning for listeners, this is part of Roberto's interview with Michael Wood Jr.
So officers generally dismiss what command says. They don't care what command says. They do whatever they want. And the reason they can do that is because, like, your lower level, like your lieutenants and your captains and like that, they don't actually follow what command says. So when Dick Bass sits out there and he would say, you know, he's done this policy and he's this and this is the way things are going to be. But it's completely irrelevant because on the street, nothing changes.
Is there any way for a commissioner to effectively reform that department then in that case?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. It's not possible the way they do it.
Okay.
And so, I'm trying to figure this out. So one reason they can't do reform is because we're led by politicians. So if you've ever noticed, that's my first line, is that policing is led by politicians, and that doesn't make any sense. So, we have a problem with civilian review boards, but I think you could get much more accomplished if, you were actually being monitored by the citizens, not by a mayor. You know, a mayor serves the interests of the donors. They don't serve the interests of the people. So, that's why I keep saying, the whole system is so wrong. Every single thing that you point out, you're going to say, well, isn't this a problem? Isn't that a problem? Yeah, the whole thing is a problem because we're not doing it right. We're led by ideology. And we're not led by actual science or facts or even goals. So what is the goal of policing?
What is the goal of policing? One other thing he said in that clip, on the street, nothing changes. I mean, he is shedding light on really breathing life into all the myriad conversations that we've had on these airwaves about law enforcement and the failures of law enforcement.
Yeah, and it's striking to hear him say that the sort of lower level command persons in a police department also completely disregard what the commissioner says, which certainly speaks to something we've talked a lot about, which is that ultimately the police commissioner here is a politician, right? And so even his own officers don't really view him as a real cop. The real cop is on the street. And that's one of the things we talked about, because one of the persons who was involved in arresting Freddie Gray and was operating as a bike cop lieutenant. One day was a lieutenant. Right. And that struck me so odd that a lieutenant, and I know Stephen had mentioned that as well, why is a lieutenant running around West Baltimore on a bicycle? And it's because police culture does sort of hold up the street cop and say that's what real policing is.
Right.
But you know, if those guys just want to get back out on the street so they can bust heads, how realistically do we feel like anyone can come in and reform this department when that's the case?
Well, and that's the $10 zillion question. I mean, it seems as though a reformer, quote unquote, and this is what we've gone over many, many times, seemed to be a losing battle, for lack of a better term, to go in and try to make changes, quote unquote, within a department. And specifically you talk about this department has challenges that many big city departments may not even have. Let's go to the phones. I want to hear what Oscar has to say about what he just heard. Oscar in Baltimore, you're on First Edition. Thanks for calling.
Okay, how you doing, Sean? Right, to your guest.
Yes, sir.
I've been telling people in Baltimore, the activists, the politicians, so-called, and they didn't want to hear it. I guess it wasn't coming from the right person. I've worked for 5 commissioners.
Say it again?
I worked under 5 commissioners.
My Lord.
It never made a difference to me. I never thought about it when I went on the street, who the commissioner was, who the mayor was, who the governor was, or even who the president was. When a police officer goes on the street, if they can write and they know the laws of the country, the state, and the city, it doesn't matter who the police commissioner is. Because I tell these people, they didn't believe, the police on the street going to do what they want to do. And they don't care who the commissioner is. People try to say, well, it starts at the top. Well, like one of your guests said, the police commissioner to them is a politician.
Right.
They don't care who the police commissioner is. They are ones on the street. And they go. You can go to a place and a policeman come on the scene, and he can do what he knows is wrong. Right.
Oscar, let me ask you this. Of the 5 commissioners that you did work under, was there one that you and the rest of the rank and file, I'll say your colleagues, that respected more than the others? I'll ask it that way.
Okay, let me answer this way. There was one that they were more fearful of that I worked under, and that was Donald Pomelo, because he was fired, the police officer and the commanders. They were afraid of Pomelo, but other than he, I never worked under any commissioner. That goes to Bishop Robinson, Battaglia, Eddie Roots, Tillman. Nothing ever changed under any of those commissioners. That's the God in heaven truth.
Interesting.
My opinion.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's actually a fascinating answer that he just gave.
That is a fascinating answer.
And specifically because it speaks to just how important to this discussion the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights is, because that law makes it incredibly hard, I think, to the minds of
right.
many people to fire officers. And if the only thing that makes you maybe think twice about what a commissioner has said is the official policy of the department is whether that commissioner is willing to fire officers or fire commanders, that law being on the books really essentially works to insulate officers from the one fear of upper command that they might otherwise have.
We have one more, a little bit shorter clip that we want to go to before you finish the segment. Let's listen, go back to Michael Wood, former Baltimore City Police Department.
I really think we need a fundamental restructuring of what law enforcement is. The whole thing is wrong. Like, we have a prison industrial complex that has the goal of having prison beds filled so that they can be efficient. Well, that is an actual management matrix and a metric that company can do correctly. if you want to make the most money, fill those feds up. So why is that the goal that also extends the law enforcement? That doesn't make any sense.
The goal, I mean, well, it speaks for itself.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things we talked a lot about was the fact that the metrics for police officers, the things upon which they are judged, are things like arrests.
Right.
And so if you judge an officer's performance based on how many people he's arrested or she has arrested, well, guess what he or she's going to do when she gets out there? She's going to find reasons to lock people up.
And one of the things that Wood said later in the conversation was they don't look at the fact that, hey, nobody got shot in my district in the last 6 months or whatever. That's not a metric that they look
irrelevant
at favorably.
Right. Like you could be a cop on a beat and you could have, you know, worked that beat to the point where there is no longer any violence there. And right. That is not, you will receive no praise for that.
Indeed. Let's take one phone call. We're almost out of time, but let's go to Ernest real quick before we get out of this segment. Ernest, you're on First Edition.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening.
Hey, in reference to the policeman's bill of rights and the Freddie Gray case, five of the officers gave statements. So that policeman's bill of rights didn't see, because it didn't even matter, policeman's bill of rights. And then the reason why it doesn't matter, because if you can straighten a policeman's bill of rights, but when a policeman is charged, is under investigation for a crime, he has the right to remain silent. He has the bill. You have to Mirandize him.
Right.
So he still doesn't have to answer anything. Just like the driver, he never answered anything because he has the right to remain silent, and they're not going to hold that against him.
But that I would say that's a slightly different issue, right? Because what we're talking about on the one hand is police fearing repercussions for ignoring police command and the ability of police command to discipline officers. This doesn't even have to be in the case where they broke a law in abusing a citizen. Just in disciplining officers for failing to adhere to departmental policy, the fact that they can't even do that limits their ability to control what those officers do in the streets.
Ernest, let me ask you this. Was Parmalo the most feared commissioner you worked under?
Yes.
Okay.
He was the most feared. And they got rid of Frazier because he said he wasn't going to tolerate police brutality. And he fired a couple of people.
Right.
And so, yeah, the people in the city wasn't satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
He had the PAL program, had... things, and I think Oscar went around and got computers and things, so that they was loaded with computers and educational, had an educational value in those centers.
Right.
And the people in Baltimore, they wanted him gone because they wanted a black police commissioner.
Mm.
And that was, I can't think of his name right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what happened.
Yeah, we got to go though, Ernest. Thank you for your call. We appreciate
okay.
it. All right. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the full Mod Squad. Steven and Taya of the Real News Network join us. So stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. ¶¶